최고.
Welcome to Connectivity. Today we're going to be talking about E3, the aftermath of E3. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and today I'm joined by Zach Miller.
Hi!
And Donald Terrio.
This show has done some things to me I don't really think I can get into.
You've come out a scarred man.
And that was just the last night of podcasting.
So your 4-hour epic NFL, right?
No, it was the night before that.
Oh.
I'll save that for off the air, though.
Okay, let's... I thought maybe, because I don't think, Zach, you've been... You haven't been on any podcast during E3, right?
No, man, my time zone has not allowed it.
Yeah. So let's just jump in straight into some of your thoughts. What did you think coming out of E3?
I'm glad I didn't go this year. I think one of the RFN guys on one of James's podcasts, he said something that I thought was right. Nintendo gave us everything we wanted, just not in the way we wanted it. Like, Calafi got his Animal Crossing game, but it's essentially a free-to-play Mario Party clone. We all got our Metroid Prime game, but it's not Metroid Prime. It's this chibi-fied 4-player Monster Hunter thing that looks rushed out the door. We didn't get even a hint of Zelda Wii U. We got this 3-swords thing that has online multiplayer, but according to Neil, doesn't really work without communication, which you don't have, according to that article he wrote.
Mm.
And then we got Star Fox, but, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I thought Star Fox just kind of looked underwhelming.
I'm excited for Star Fox. I think it looks good.
Yeah, it does look good. It just looks kind of like Star Fox 64, with Transformers.
That's what I've been asking for 10 years.
True.
Star Fox 64-2.
Yeah, and they're implementing some Star Fox 2 stuff, and that is cool, but...
Mm.
Like, and there's just... Can you just release Yoshi already? Good Lord, stop showing us Yoshi and release it.
I'm buying it on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, good for you. there was a really funny tweet, you guys probably saw it. Somebody posted a screenshot of that woman sitting in front of all those Yoshi amiibos, and it said, whatever her name is, with the worldwide supply of Yoshi amiibos.
And then it turns out that in France, some of the amiibos somehow got destroyed.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Nope.
Wow.
So yeah.
And then we got a bunch of amiibo news, more amiibo stuff, all these Animal Crossing amiibos, and the Mario, the 8-bit Mario amiibo, which is enormous.
Is it really? How much bigger is it?
It's huge. And it actually looks... Mario Maker looks like a cool game. They're really pushing it as their big kind of holiday title, but I don't know if it... Like, it's not for me. I'm not going to buy that game because I just don't have the patience or creativity to make a good level.
Mm. Yeah, you do have to be sort of... interested in creating stuff to really get into that game. Like, I'm pretty hyped for it because I like doing that sort of stuff. Even if I don't, I might not go fully deep into it, but I'm going to probably create at least, 20 or 30 levels over the course of
my playtime
with it.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then that extended Mario Maker montage and the B Super Mario video thing, I thought, this is their placeholder for nothing. Not having any big reveal at the end. There's no, oh my God, it's Zelda U, or oh my God, it's a Metroid Prime 4, a showstopper.
That was the main thing I think I took away from the presentation. Like, most of the games that they showed that are going to be out this year or early next year are all very, seem to be at least, like, they're going to be fun to a degree. And their direct presentation just lacked that extra punch, that surprise. We needed a bigger surprise. I mean, they had some surprises, but they were all, like, you know, 3DS games.
Yeah.
A sort of B-tiered 3DS games. It's hard to get excited about that stuff. Even no matter how good they turn out to be, just sort of seeing the trailers and things for those sort of games, like, you go, oh, yeah, that's interesting, but
yeah,
it's never exciting enough.
No, and James made a good point when he said that they showed trailers for Fire Emblem and Fire Emblem Cross Shin Megami Tensei and Xenoblade X, but God knows if anyone knows what the heck was going on in those things, because they were Japanese.
Yeah, yep.
You know, they didn't show any gameplay. Shouldn't they be pushing Xenoblade X 5 months, 6 months from release, showing you what it is? I mean, it'll probably get its own direct. But come on, guys, show us some gameplay. Show us something. Don't leave it all to the treehouse.
Yeah, they needed to make Xenoblade exciting again for people, especially because a lot more people watch the E3 direct than they would, like, a lot of people don't usually watch the other directs, you know, like, yeah. There's more of an eye on them, and if you're not going to excite people, they're not going to buy a Wii U.
Yeah, and even Reggie's comment at the beginning, he said, you know, we were working on this NX, but we'll tell you more about it in 2016. My immediate thought was, oh my God, all the big games are going over to the NX. They're not putting any development time or dollars into Wii U.
Well, it makes sense to a degree.
Oh, of course it does. It just, they don't want to get put a damper on the rest of the show. Like, oh, this is the end of the life stuff.
I would have liked them to have put Next Level on a Wii U game instead of 3DS, like the Metroid Force, Federation Force. Maybe it's because the turnaround on that game is quicker than we think it is, but they could have probably, you know, put that onto Wii U instead of 3DS.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if they had more, I don't know, if they had more budget. I mean, it doesn't look great. It looks like, you know, it doesn't look very good. Certainly doesn't look like a Metroid Prime game. I don't know.
They should have maybe even taken the opportunity just to put out a new IP. There's no real reason, it seems, to slap the Metroid name on it other than saying, hey, look, there's a Metroid game.
Exactly right. So, yeah, I was pretty disappointed with it overall. And, you know, honestly, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but once the realization came along that Last Guardian is not coming out till late 2016, or might get pushed back even more because that's the curse of that game, and Final Fantasy VII Remake, who knows when that's actually coming, there was not a whole lot at E3 this year for me in the near future. They didn't even show Ratchet and Clank at Sony's conference, so I was like, well, who fucking cares this year?
So they put out a trailer, didn't they?
Yeah, before the show, but they never. Yeah. Probably should have ran it during the show.
Right, that's right. I saw the pre-show trailer.
Yeah,
but I salivated.
Yeah, because they got a movie coming out for that as well, so they could have taken the opportunity to plug that.
The game, but based on the movie, based on the trailer, based on the game.
So you're not down with the Rare Replay then?
Oh, shit. No, yeah, Rare Replay looks amazing, but I just have so many questions. They only had playable versions of the HD-ified games they already have on Xbox Live. And I want to know if other games in that collection are up-resed in some way. Like, Jet Force Gemini is in there, but that game looks terrible now, and I want to know if they've improved it at all. Things like that. If there's one thing that'll make me buy an Xbox One, it's that.
They've shown screenshots of Blast Corps and Jet Force Gemini and stuff. And the screenshots make it look like they are a lot, like, they're sharper.
Oh, baby.
than on the 64. So there is at least maybe something like the Wii Virtual Console, where they're just internally raising the resolution.
Okay.
Maybe they've got that going on, but the Rare Replay does look good.
It is a crime that's not on a Nintendo system, because so many of those games are Nintendo games. Good lord. They've got Battletoads Arcade on that collection. That alone might make me buy a Wii, Xbox One. So, great. Yeah, that was good. You're right. Well, what were your feelings on the show?
My feelings on the show were pretty much what I said before. It was sort of interesting to watch, but there was no surprise, really. There's nothing really to get excited about besides, like I said, I'm pretty excited for Star Fox.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo's, the stance on Nintendo's E3 will soften as we get closer to the release of a lot of these games. Because I think, because a lot of the Nintendo stuff is coming sooner rather than later.
True.
So, you know, they may have lost E3 in terms of excitement and mind share, but I think over the next few months, people will come around and say, "Oh, this game's coming out. That's good. People should consider getting a Wii U for these games that are coming out."
Yeah.
I think that's generally how the last few E3s for Nintendo have gone. But aside from last year's, where they sort of, even with a limited amount of games, they managed to pull out excitement from people, especially with the Treehouse. When they did the Treehouse last year,
yeah.
Because no one else, none of the other companies were doing that sort of thing, and it surprised everyone.
Yeah, last year they had Splatoon, and they had Smash Brothers, and they had
a bunch
of heavy hitters.
Splatoon was a great reveal last year. As soon as the trailer rolled on that last year, that was pretty exciting. And we did get the snippet of Zelda last year as well. Right. So overall, the Direct was edited better, and I guess some of the content was probably a bit more exciting in last year's Direct video. This year they tried to recapture some of that by going behind the scenes and showing us, talking to the developers. Like, they had the thing with Miyamoto and Star Fox,
right?
And then they had another Yoshi segment with about the amiibos and stuff like that, but I think those segments only worked last year because we weren't as familiar with the games that they went into that sort of detail on.
Yeah.
And that were a bit more of a surprise. So you had the initial surprise of the trailer or the reveal of the game, and then they took a breather and went down and spoke about how the Yoshi team went to a yarn store and picked out different fabrics and things like that.
Yeah.
Which was cool. I thought that was cool last year, but those segments fell flat to me this year.
Yeah. I think it was only the two that you mentioned, and they were just kind of wedged in there. I think we've heard that story from Miyamoto before about the origins of Star Fox.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about you, Donald? You've been pretty quiet here.
I wasn't really feeling the Direct. I mean, I had most of it sent to me beforehand so I could get news stories ready. But
oh, right, yeah.
So I did. I directly asked Neil, "Are we sure this is it?" And aside from my game of the show showing up in there, Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem, there wasn't a whole lot in the Direct. I mean, I thought the Trios was great this year, but some of the decisions about what they chose to show both in the video and the Treehouse left me a little baffled. Like, why would you bury Fatal Frame on day 3, and why would you why would you not show Devil's Third at all? Because we know that exists.
Isn't that coming out in August?
For Europe and Japan, yes.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Nothing's been confirmed for that game for North America.
Well, why wouldn't they show Fatal Frame in the Direct?
I'm not sure. They literally only showed it on day 3 of the Treehouse Live.
Yeah. They're burying one.
Even if they didn't want to go in depth on some of these more secondary titles, they should have had some sort of sizzle reel featuring them. Like, they didn't have that at all. There was no like quick cuts of a trailer just to say, oh, look at these games, all these games. It would have at least made it seem like they had a bit more in the schedule coming up.
And they usually have an eShop sizzle reel too. And this year I like that they let people, you know, at home download all demos of all these indies. It would have been cool to see a sizzle reel of those indies in the direct.
And possibly call out that, hey, these things are on the eShop from now until Monday. Go get them.
Right.
So there's some things they could have easily put in there that don't leave the show ending on, well, it's probably the worst ending they've had since the Nintendo Land fireworks.
Oh, absolutely. It felt like that. It felt like a video version of that.
We have, Mario Tennis coming out as well, which I keep forgetting about.
I keep forgetting about it too, yeah.
Like, they didn't really make much of a thing about it, but it's
now there
it's
are
Mario
Mega
Tennis.
Mushrooms, but it's Mario Tennis.
I have a problem with the items in Mario Tennis. I really don't like the fluff they add to the game.
It's like they wanted to make a big deal out of the fact that, you know, it's the 30th anniversary of Mario, but you've got Mario Maker, which admittedly is going to be most of that, and then a tennis game and an RPG that doesn't come out till next year.
Yeah. I said this on the reaction show that we did. Like, I was expecting some sort of HD remake of something just to fill out the schedule a little more. It would have been easy for them to do. Mario Sunshine was a good, probably like a good choice, really, to put that out again in HD. That, like, I don't know why that they haven't decided to do another one. They did Wind Waker, and that was it.
Well, I guess they just want to be so different than everyone else, because everybody else was showing stuff that's next year, or in Sony's case, later, and padding out the schedule of HD remakes, while Nintendo theoretically has 8 first-party games coming out on the Wii U before the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I guess they didn't feel the need to just have that filler in there.
What do you guys think about... because going into E3, it seemed like Nintendo was getting a bunch of announcements out of the way, because that made us think we were going to be getting like a big E3 that had more important things to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But do you guys think they should have just waited and rolled it all into the digital event?
Yeah, or at the very least, they could have, you know, leaked some things and then saved other things for the direct. They could have just kind of padded that information, or not padded out, organized those reveals better.
I think it would have been good to, they should have held the mother thing for the direct.
Absolutely. And
could have gone live after that went out.
Absolutely.
That
would have been pretty good.
I almost wonder if they maybe should have put a couple of those Smash updates in there, if only to save the eShop from buckling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
But I suppose going with DLC and your biggest show of the year is probably not going to make the retailers too happy.
True. And they announced Lucas last year, but it is weird they didn't make a bigger deal about Ryu, who plays really well. He's a really good character. I was shocked at how much I liked him.
Yeah, I've only dabbled with the new characters, but he seemed all right.
And Lucas is so much better than Ness. Oh my gosh.
Do you guys think Mother 3 is a lot more likely now?
I think it depends on the sales of Mother Zero.
I'd like to think that it is, especially where they could easily, you know, put the code in with the Lucas Amiibo or something, but I honestly don't know at this point, because the way they were able to put Mother or Earthbound Beginnings out is they had... The game was done and translated for English. So you could... It's simple as, here, it's on the eShop... We're charging $7 because it's an import title. Mother 3, unless they license the translation, which, let's face it, they're not going to do that, they've got to go through and actually do work on that game. So at this point, for the virtual console, I don't know. And I'm a big Earthbound fan, so
it could happen at E3 next year. That'll be 3 years running that they've announced a virtual console mother game.
Well, and that would be the 10th anniversary of Earthbound, so or Mother 3, so I suppose you could.
Although, I mean, you know, yeah, they're not good with anniversaries.
That aren't Mario's.
I mean, even when Mario does have an anniversary, they put out a ROM of Mario All-Stars on a disc, and they do send us your own videos. If you want to celebrate Mario's 30th anniversary, you can, I guess. Here's a link to where you do it.
So, you guys have any further thoughts on E3 in general? Like, do you think you're going to be happy with the games by the end of the year? What are we buying?
Go ahead, Donald.
Okay, I was going to say, I put about 20 pre-orders down for things on the Nintendo systems before the end of the year. Because it 20. Was... yeah, well, it helped they were 30% off. And right. Some of them I can easily cancel in case I get them for review. But there is going to be a lot coming out this year, but it's a lot of A-minus and B-tier games when it really would help if there was something really AAA. I mean, sure, I'm probably going to love Star Fox. Bayonetta 2 was my game of the year last year, so I'll follow Platinum to the ends of the earth, but I don't know what the year is going to look like. It's probably going to be a pretty down year for Nintendo overall.
Why didn't they say in the Direct that Platinum was working on Star Fox? That's so weird to me.
Are they actually... They're not like the... They're more the grunt work, right? The design's mainly coming from Nintendo, yeah? Isn't that how it's going? So I guess maybe they didn't want to trumpet the Platinum brand because, I don't know, it's not their full like development behind it.
Maybe.
Well, Platinum's making everything out of Japan seemingly now, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they've got Scalebound, Star Fox... Near 2, Transformers, and they're also apparently working on Project Guard to turn that into a full game.
Oh, I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah, I think it got lost in the new shuffle around E3, but I think that came out from Eurogamer.
I always thought of Platinum as like a bunch of guys sitting around an office being like, we should make a game like this. And they all say, okay. And there's like 10 of them. But they've kind of sneakily become this enormous developer who gets work from everybody in the world now, and good for them. Yeah. I mean, they deserve it. They do games that nobody else will do.
Even though most of their games don't sell, they've become this prestige developer that other companies want to hire just to say, "Hey, look, we've got a really good developer, Platinum, working on this game.
Putting out this weird ass game."
It's going to be good, but probably won't sell much. I mean, Star Fox is probably going to be one of their biggest hits ever, right?
Sure. I thought the best news out of E3 was the more or less confirmation that there's going to be a Metroid Prime on NX. Developer saying, well, if we were making a Metroid Prime 4, it would probably not be on Wii U. Wink, so wink, nudge, nudge.
It'd be on the next console.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that they've already started and it was retro working on it. But they've probably started it on Wii U like a couple of years ago when Tropical Freeze was finishing up. But halfway through, they've gone, let's pull it to NX. Yeah.
Let's T-table this thing.
You know, there's not really going to be an audience for this.
Like, I mean, putting it as a launch title, that'll be great. Like, a lot more people will buy the game. You know, just to have something really good on launch. You know, Metroid isn't the biggest selling franchise, but maybe it'll get a launch bump.
An opportunity to be.
Yeah, it could. You know, if the word of mouth is really good on it, it could cross 2 million units sold on it. Maybe. Well, depending on how well the NX sells.
I mean, a lot of that's going to depend on how it sells, because Twilight Princess was, 8 million on the Wii?
Yeah.
New Super Mario U, I think, is over 4 now on the Wii U, which is pretty darn impressive when you think about it. But If the only thing they've got for launch is a Metroid, I don't know. That
they might have Zelda 2 on that.
Metroid would be way better than New Super Mario Brothers game. I mean, no matter how good that is, it's just, you know.
I think if they have a double header with a 3D Mario from EAD Tokyo and a Metroid, that would probably do some damage, I think. But I'm reasonably confident that at best the NX will get an up port of the Wii U version of Zelda.
I can see that.
Except it'll be more like a re-release of the Wii U game that came out the year before.
Interesting. Okay. Xbox is done with some of their games.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, Nintendo's not going to hopefully make the same mistake they did with Wii U. So coming out with their big guns on launch day, Metroid, 3D Mario, and maybe, you know, a slightly updated Zelda from the Wii U, that would be a pretty heavy launch lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only problem is, what do they follow it up with? Because I don't think they'd have to basically go great guns on the NX, and then what does that leave their next, or whatever we're calling the next console, what does that leave the handheld with?
You would hope that they can garner some early third-party support for the next system, and that may fill out a few months after launch. And then, you know, after the Splatoon team wraps up the DLC and all the updates and things, they may turn around and start working on a sequel to Splatoon even. That could come out maybe a year or year and a half after launch. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, but yeah, what they're saying about Metroid is that apparently it's going to take a while to put out an HD game's worth of content in that. So,
right.
Yeah, it's kind of wishful thinking, but we're hoping that Nintendo is going to be sensible and do something, plan ahead, ahead this time.
Hire some more staff so they have, you know, full sets of development teams. One you can do focus on handheld and one on console. You don't want to be caught out like Sony, where you're declaring a system legacy console 3 years into its life.
Mm. Hopefully Nintendo could just, I don't know, they should just buy some, like, tell Capcom to pay Capcom or someone to put out some games.
Yeah.
Just fund development early on for the system. Just throw some money at other developers to get games out early, and hopefully that'll be enough to get people to buy it. And then, you know, it's a positive feedback loop at that point. More developers will want to develop then. The Wii U failed mainly because of the bad word of mouth going into the console's launch, and then afterwards there was just nothing. So,
yeah, it became an N64 situation where the only ones supporting it were Nintendo itself.
So, do we think they go back to a stage show next year, considering they're more than likely going to have hardware to show?
Depends how confident they are in the new hardware, I guess. Depends what it is. If it's some sort of crazy hybrid thing, Iwata can pull that out of his pocket and hold it up.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because I'm trying to see if it's worth plotting to get down to LA for the show next year and be on the away team instead of being on the home team this year. But the main reason I'd want to go is because I'd want to be the first person to play the new handheld system, so.
Yeah. I was telling some folks today that it might be a good year to go back to E3 next year. I'll keep an eye on their directs the rest of the year, but it could it could happen again. I love going, but I hate going. I can only say that I've done it twice, but both times were love hate thing. It's going to take a lot to get me back, but I think next year might be it.
I guess it depends what kind of E3 console showing it'll be. Will it be like the Wii U's first one, where it was, we all thought it was going to be a proper full reveal, but it was sort of early tech demo-y sort of stuff. And then the following E3, they had more of the games, stuff, right? Yeah. So what do we think, if they show, do a full like reveal next E3, do we think it would launch 2016, like December 2016 or something? If it's more of the soft reveal that they did for the Wii U, we probably won't even see the console until 2017.
That's true.
So it may see two E3s.
What I'm thinking is we're probably, because next year they're going to have to show the new handheld, because 3DS is unfortunately running out of steam. If you look at its sales numbers, they need to do something to jazz that back up.
Well, yeah, because they didn't bother unveiling any new 3DS games at all.
Well,
man, that chapped my ass too. I'm still looking for a reason to have bought that thing.
They should have made games better on new 3DS, and they should. I don't like, because some of the reactions from the guys at E3 were saying, "Oh, they shouldn't say that the new 3DS version is better. Like, it plays better on the new 3DS. Why not? You want to sell hardware, say right. It's better on the new system."
Right.
Well, I bet you Hyrule Warriors is going to play real well on the new one as opposed to the old one.
Yeah.
Mm. But hopefully they use the extra power of the new 3DS to make it actually better.
Yeah, but I think next year there might be first reveal of what the handheld and console are going to do if they are truly one operating system, as Iwata has indicated they're looking to do.
Right.
So we could see a new dedicated handheld, the first of a new console, so sort of like a 2011 Wii U showing, and then who knows what else we could see as far as hardware goes.
I'd be down with that. I think that's probably right.
The combined OS is going to be interesting to see how that pans out. So hopefully that means there will be one eShop where you can see everything, and then when you click on a game, it'll come up saying what systems it will play on. You know, some may be both, some may be one. Hopefully that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
That's meant to be launching in August or September, right? The new update for the 3DS and
that. Well, there will have been a giant maintenance by the time this goes up.
Right.
That could plant the seeds for that. But I think we were going to get more details about what the new loyalty system in OS is going to be at a shareholders meeting in October. If they were planning on doing that this year, it's going to be very late this year.
Right. Okay, so any final thoughts on anything? The future, E3, whatever?
Can I have Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem now? Preferably with a title that isn't complete gibberish?
F-E-X-S-M-T.
I've just been calling it Grief, because I think it's like Genki Roku. I don't even remember what half the Japanese words in the current working title are.
I like Grief. That's a good one. I have nothing to say that I haven't said already.
Yeah. All right.
Star Fox.
Let's leave it at that, guys. Thanks for joining me again. And we'll probably talk again on a future connectivity episode. So thanks, everyone.
Oh, bye. Yeah,
thanks. Bye.
Hello, and welcome to a brand new segment here on Connectivity. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and today we're going to be imagining, or imagineering, a Metroid game. Today I'm joined by Dr. Jonathan Metz from Radio Free Nintendo. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
Pretty good, thanks. Pretty good. So, are you ready to talk a bit about Metroid? You're like a huge Metroid fan.
Yeah, I'm usually ready to talk about Metroid.
I thought so.
Whether people want it or not.
It could be a threat, yeah. Okay. Let's. I was thinking we could just start off a bit about what are our favorite Metroid games and just a little brief background on our history with the franchise. So I'll start with you. What's your favorite Metroid game?
I don't want to give you the whole background on my history because it's complicated. No. I've told the story before and it's probably not worth the time it would take. But my favorite 2D Metroid game, really my favorite to play through, is Zero Mission. And I actually did a segment with somebody from Connectivity. It's been a few months ago. But we talked about that game a whole lot. I adore Zero Mission. I think it's the most refined. It's the most fun to play. Just the mechanics of it, the control, the feel of the character, the speed of the action. The variety and the naturalism of, you know, the adding things like being able to hold on to ledges, which they just took from Fusion. And even though they're kind of putting it into this remake, it was never part of the original Metroid. They just said, hey, the game plays better when you do this. It's more fun when you have this ability. So let's just stick that in there. And so to me, it kind of showed them going off in a really great new direction where they said, you know what, let's just make these games as fun as possible. And then we can get away with making them harder and more complicated and even shorter, maybe. But Zero Mission, I think, is just pure fun and probably my favorite Game Boy Advance title.
It is a very compact and fast-paced game, I would say, yeah. My history with the franchise starts with Metroid Prime, actually. Ooh. I didn't even know what Metroid was until I started sort of reading about Prime in magazines and things like that. So that was my first go at the franchise, and I did like it quite a bit. I'm not the hugest Metroid fan, but, you know, I play most of the games that come out in the series. So as a starting point for talking about where to take Metroid in the future, I was thinking, what could be a good starting point for, say, a Wii U title? I don't really know if I'd want to go back to the Metroid Prime style game outright. So I was thinking, what if we made it third person, like make it back into a third person sort of game? What do you think about going that direction for the next one?
Well, they kind of already did that with Other M. It's mostly sort of third person. You know, it has some brief first person aiming stuff going on, but it's that's mostly a third person Metroid game. And I think the third person part of it actually works really great. Like that's the best part of Other M. That's the part that really feels like Metroid and feels like cool and exciting and like a cool new direction for that series. And it's where it turns into like jump kicking Ridley and like weird interactive cutscenes and pointing the remote at the screen to shoot your missiles and what's basically a glorified interactive cutscene again is not very satisfying. And that stuff really got in the way of what I thought at times was a really cool, you know, it turned those familiar corridors and like vertical shafts of the old Metroid games into this weird kind of isometric view where it made it feel more like a real place, but you were still basically in 2D level design. You know, there are very few even rooms in that game that had like a true three-dimensional feel to them.
In a way, I guess it would be similar to what they've done with Mario series in 3D Land and 3D World. It's sort of a 3D, 2D version of that game formula.
Yeah, and you know, it's a little sloppy sometimes, the you know, from the graphics it's hard to tell whether there might be a secret over there or not, you know. I mean, there's a few kind of growing pains with that transition, but I still felt like Other M at its best was kind of a step in that direction of maybe making some kind of hybrid between the 2D and the 3D games. So, Other M is kind of tragic to me because the parts of it that are good are really good, and the parts of it that are bad are really, really bad. And it the whole thing is kind of a tainted experience. But it does have some cool ideas, and I would love to see them come back in a game that's, you know, overall better, more consistent.
That one of the things about that in contrast to other M, the Prime series, is it's a bit more plodding. The retro games mm-hmm. are slower paced. Then Samus is nowhere near as agile, and I think like the way the Japanese developers approach Metroid, it is much more snappier and
it's more fun. It's a little less cerebral. You know, Metroid Prime is very much it's in some ways maybe more directly descended from stuff like Myst. You know, it's a first-person adventure game where you're literally like searching for clues in a big, complicated 3D environment and trying to solve puzzles that are built into the walls. You know, in that way, it has more in common with like old PC adventure games and some of the later Myst sequels where you did exactly the same stuff. And I think the Prime games did suffer a little bit from that tempo, you know, that you lost from even from Super Metroid. Is a much faster game than the Prime series. And that, to me, whether you bring back, well, especially in 3D, if they're going to bring back Metroid in 3D, it's got to be fast. It's got to be as fast as Other M, if not even faster, depending on the kind of game that it is. But it needs to have that quickness. I mean, it should, in that sense, you know, it should be something more like Ninja Gaiden or Bayonetta. Just at the speed of it, I still tend to think that the action, though, should be focused on just jumping and shooting. You know, from that standpoint, it should be more like a Mega Man. And doing that in 3D is tough, but I kind of feel like that's the way to go, especially from a third person.
What do you think about, say, like Metroid games? You know, they try and take place on these massive alien worlds, but I feel a lot of the time that even with the 3D ones, they're still constrained by keeping to Metroid's legacy, like having the, you know, the various doorways and passageways. I know that to a degree back on in Prime that was a technical reason. Yeah. But what do you think about opening up the environments a bit more and maybe disregarding some of the series legacy, like taking away some of the, making a bit more naturalistic, taking away the doors, you know, Samus overcome more natural obstacles?
Yeah, I really like that idea, actually. And you could probably take it too far and get into like open world game territory where the environments are completely continuous and it's all part of this one big world that you're exploring. There's no elevators, there's no doorways, and there's no load times. You could very quickly get to the point where it's impossible for that kind of environment to have all the things that we like about Metroid levels. You know, so I don't think you want it to be that expansive, but just maybe just in the art design. And Nick, I don't know if you played Metroid Prime 3 on the Wii.
I did.
I felt that the art design in that game was starting to trend in the kind of direction you're talking about. You know, there were a lot of rooms where I felt like the door, you know, this big glowy octagonal thing, whatever it is, that you have to shoot to move on to the next. You know, it's so distracting and it's so familiar that I felt a lot of the rooms actually were designed to hide those, like at the end of a long curved corridor or, you know, kind of underneath some growth and some stuff in the environment, because they wanted you to walk into the room and get the sense of, I don't know where the exits are. I don't know what the rules are in this place, because it's more natural looking, or because of this crazy Sky City architecture that, that is kind of obscuring some of the artifacts of just it being a Metroid game that has to have certain Metroid things in it. So I feel like Retro Studios is perfectly capable of kind of peeling away some of those vestiges. And I think they have been going in that direction until they got sidetracked by Donkey Kong.
It would definitely be a balance in how to approach it, but just taking away some of the more gamey elements that have been around since the NES game, I think is a good sort of starting point to take envisioning a new direction for the series.
What do you think, Nick, about story and how story. I don't know if you ever played Fusion, because that one's kind of notorious in this regard, but even like Prime 3 was a lot more story heavy, and then of course Other M, you know, is beyond the pale. But what do you think about the role, like how much story should there be in these games? What's the optimal amount that we should be looking for?
That's also difficult to really pinpoint exactly how to approach a story in Metroid, because you can't just keep repeating the same Super Metroid style story over and over again. But people don't seem to react that well to cutscenes and story heavy dialogue and things like that. So, it's not an obvious answer, I would say.
I have a theory on this. I think the Metroid story works the best when the storyline is moving forward. When new things are happening, those are the most interesting aspects of the series as it goes forward. And to me, where the series has started to fall apart a little bit, is where it starts to look inward and it's starting to explore Samus's history and her character motivation, and how did she become a bounty hunter, and what is her life like as a bounty hunter, and all of these things to me add up to very little of my enjoyment of the series. Whereas, you know, when it dealt with, oh gosh, Samus, killed all the Metroids and now they're extinct except for this one baby that's attached itself to her, and then that comes back later to save her later on, and then it's killed, it's sacrificed, and then moving forward, she's infected by the Metroids, and you know, and she has to go and reclaim the station. To me, moving, you know, like in Fusion, people complain about the story because there's a lot of it, and that's just from a series that had virtually none before that, you know, other than like a 5-minute thing at the beginning. So in Fusion, though, it had a lot of forward story. It had a lot of new stuff that's about the X virus and the SAX, this creepy, you know, Samus reflection that's very, very deadly and very scary. And all that stuff was really cool. And you're chasing down the X virus by using, and you've turned the Metroid's powers for good, but it's creepy, and now you're weak to ice instead of to fire. You know, like all this weird stuff. And all that is so exciting. And the part where Fusion falls down a bit is when it gets into this, into Samus's weird relationship with her old friend Adam, and how now he's in the computer somehow, and she's haunted by these memories and whatever, you know, and then that stuff is even amplified and made a lot worse in Other M. But the new stuff is actually interesting and cool, and I just like, let's just focus on that. Let's just do new things. How about that? We know what the Metroid story is. You know, it's like Spider-Man. I don't need to see Spider-Man's origin for the fifth time when they reboot the series again. Just move on. Just show a new villain. You know, let's have a new story. Metroid needs the same thing.
I would even say that deep down, you know, people don't want to know Samus' backstory. It's a character that is better left to have mystery behind it.
Yep. She's Han Solo with a ponytail. Yeah. You know, I mean, the more you know about her, the less interesting she is.
Just moving on to progression again, I want to go back to a bit of the game progression. Most of the time, the progression in Metroid games is sort of gated by what abilities you have, what doors you can get through. Going back to having that slightly more naturalistic approach to the environment, what would you think about instead of gating it strictly by what power-ups you have? You could even start with most of your abilities, maybe. What happens if just certain areas are more difficult to get through? Some enemies are harder to get past, or you may need to go to another area first and use, say, something, one of your other abilities to activate something in that immediate area, you know?
Here's what I would do. I would, you know, have you ever played Metal Gear Solid 3?
No, I haven't.
So they take away the radar, like the all-powerful three-dimensional radar that you had before in Metal Gear Solid, which people had become so dependent upon, and they give you this very basic kind of sonar system, so you can kind of tell when somebody's nearby, but not very accurately, and you don't know what direction they're coming from. But they give you this camouflage system, and they basically make you kind of relearn how to interact with the systems that were already in the game, because you have less information. But you have, it forces you to pay attention to different things about the environment and the way the enemies are behaving. And what if in the next 3D Metroid, if it does have these more naturalistic environments and you're really kind of exploring this stuff in a more honest way, what if they start to strip down, they find some story excuse maybe to strip down all the overlay stuff, all the really awesome, cool hologram interface stuff that was introduced with Metroid Prime. It was so groundbreaking at the time. It was so cool. Mm. And we've become very dependent upon it. Like, that's the only way that we can actually recognize anything useful in the environment, because that thing highlights it all the time. And you're always going over the scan visor. And what if, for a change of pace, you kind of, maybe Samus's helmet breaks or something, you know, during the beginning, and you're kind of forced to just like learn how to pay closer attention to this very detailed artwork around you, and like learn what you can interact with just based on the way it's designed, you know, based on the way the surface looks, based on the shape of it. That to me is like maybe a little pie in the sky, but I feel like that's really exciting kind of territory for Metroid to go into.
I think Nintendo is generally very good at doing that sort of thing already. They design levels and environments that
you can just look at
and know what to do with it.
It plays to their strengths. And plus, it would be such a shock, I think, because the stuff Metroid did with interface is now in everything. And if you really strip that stuff away, it changes the way you play the game. It changes the way you look at the game. And it's a great way to showcase their new graphical power, you know, in these new systems. So I don't know if it's realistic. It would definitely be tricky to do, but it's just, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of directions. I mean, that's why I want a new Metroid so badly. It's why I talk about it all the time. And I'm like, come on, let's go. Let's do more Metroids. Because I love this series and I love seeing it change. It's changed so much over the years.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much potential left in this franchise. And I really want to see Nintendo try. I mean, sure, it doesn't always work out like with other M. Okay, pick yourself back up and try again. You know, do something different, and try to keep making it better. But I'm still excited about the idea of playing more Metroid. I've never gotten sick of it, and I think they're a long way from making me sick of Metroid. So I just really want to see it keep going.
Yeah, it would be interesting to open the game up in the midst of a boss battle, straight away, you just dropped in basically with a small bit of setup, and you, Samus loses that fight and loses the suit entirely. You could start off as Zero Suit Samus.
Oh, yeah. You have to go find pieces of the suit, maybe one at a time.
Yeah, like imagine just coming across the arm cannon by itself, and she's only got the arm cannon. I don't know how practical that would be, but you know, you could sort of see that as a twist on her gaining just upgrades to the suit she's already inside of.
Well, Skyward Sword did that a little bit. You know, there's a part of the game where you lose all your items and you have to get them back one at a time, and you're kind of stealthing around. And it's, you know, it's a little bit like the stealth stuff at the end of Zero Mission. But it makes you appreciate those abilities that you had for most of the game that you'd been taking for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it's the only thing you have, and they can kind of set up this series of puzzles that really force you to use items like the boomerang or the bow and arrow that you had, you know, really hadn't been making much use of. Like, you kind of thought you knew all the puzzles that you could do with that stuff, but when it's the only tool you've got left, you can think of a lot of a lot of ways to take that with Metroid too, I think.
Yeah, it could be interesting if, say, the mission that Samus is on is just, she could just like just want to get off the planet. She's separated from a ship or whatever. And what if there is an aspect of good aliens species on the planet, and you have to utilize, sort of pick and choose who to trust in terms of alien life forms. There may be some sort of plant life that is useful that otherwise, like, maybe it attacks you at first, but if you can get close enough to it without sort of awaking it, you'll be able to use parts of the environment for different things.
Huh. So you're not talking about, like, talking to these aliens. You're just...
No, I wasn't necessarily talking... No, it came across
that way. You're just observing them and then trying to figure out how you might be able to take advantage of them.
pretty much everything in Metroid games, especially in the Prime ones, they just want to attack you, or the alien life forms that are just running around will attack you.
Yeah.
You know, what if you can utilize some of them for things, like even puzzles?
Yeah. I like that idea a lot. So there's a lot of ways they can take it. I mean, I was also thinking, you know, the all these cutscenes in Other M really didn't work that great. I felt like they weren't, I didn't like the style of them, and you know, there wasn't that much story to it, really. It was just kind of a lot of melodrama. And I thought, what would be better? I mean, if they're committed to telling a story in Metroid, what would be the ideal form that that might take? And I thought of Cowboy Bebop. I don't know if you're familiar with the anime series, but I'm not like the world's biggest fan or anything, but I've seen it, a lot of it, and I think it's really cool. And I think it would be actually that style, the pace of the storytelling. They're not afraid to leave their characters really mysterious. They're not afraid to take like wild style changes and like really focus on weird little aspects. But I feel like that kind of approach, to a Metroid story would be really cool. And, you know, Nintendo could tie it in with like an anime series in Japan. That seems like it, you know, could be great. And that's been successful for a lot of video game franchises. Like Yo-Kai Watch is basically popular because of the show. You know, the game came out, nobody cared. Then they made the show, and then everybody wanted the game after that. So yeah, that could be huge for Metroid. Just to take that approach, it's already very compatible, I think, with Nintendo's, you know, their interest for Metroid in terms of making it more cinematic and, you know, adding some kind of Japanese flair to it, you know, because like the Japanese audience really doesn't care about Metroid, and that's too bad. That seems like something we should salvage.
Yeah, it's it appears Metroid's popularity sort of dwindled a bit over here in the West as well, though. So it needs a shot in the arm, but
what do you mean in the West? You're like directly south of Japan.
You know, America and other places outside Japan. But I still can't really think what would a good Metroid story be. What is interesting outside of, like, if you just look, if you're gonna leave Samus out of it and basically have some set up some sort of story, what would be a good idea to explore?
I really don't care. As long as it's told well, as long as it's stylish and it's not annoying and it's brisk and it doesn't get in the way of playing the game, then I don't care what the plot is. I just I would like, if they're going to do it, if they're going to put a lot of story in there, do it properly. Like, make it at least fun to watch. Make it, you know, do it like the Subspace Emissary. You know, I mean, it's not telling the most interesting story ever, but it's goofy and it's really quick and it's entertaining while it lasts. I mean, to me, that's good enough for Metroid, because the core appeal of the series is not the story. The story is kind of a bonus. I think people like Metroid because of the exploration gameplay and the feeling that you're, you know, building a superhero piece by piece over the course of the game. And that's really what they should focus on. The story should just be kind of like a cool wrapper around it to make it, you know, more memorable versus the other games in the series.
Would you like to see the Metroid creatures be changed in any way? Do you think that would make it more interesting? Could they, you know, is there only one left, or is there no more left anymore in like the future timeline after Fusion?
Oh, you mean the Metroids themselves?
Yeah, the Metroids themselves.
Ah, the yeah. You know, I kind of like the way that they were handled in Prime, where they were never really the boss, maybe a little bit towards the end. But, you know, I seem to remember fighting some weird, like, interdimensional Phazon Metroids that were kind of boss-like. But for the most part, they were kind of these tough enemies that are just hanging out, and you can get through them if you're really good and if you're careful, but they are kind of scary, and they always are dangerous no matter how powerful you are. Like, if there's Metroids in the room, watch out, because they'll take advantage of you. And I kind of like that. They're kind of this chaos element, but they're not really a boss. It's not something that you build up to. It's more like you just turn the corner and, hey, here's a Metroid. It's terrifying. Get away from it or figure out how to kill it. I like that more. It makes them feel more like animals. you know, mm-hmm. which is, it fits more in with all the other enemies in the game.
Yeah. I guess, say if they did use Zero Suit Samus a bit more, encountering Metroids in Zero Suit form would be far more terrifying. You could use, like, have an environment that is a bit more like a horror game, maybe it's very dark,
mm-hmm.
and Samus has to creep around a lot more just to try and minimize the getting the Metroids involved at all.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it would be a lot more like Alien Isolation from last year.
You wouldn't want the whole game like that, but just, you know, maybe early on it would be good to set the mood.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe like a break in the middle. Even late in the game,
yeah.
Just, you know, right when you're getting a little bit too much momentum, you know, they kind of give you this break. Mm. Yeah, that could be cool. I like that.
Or what happens if there is just a lot of Metroids, like a huge amount of them in on a planet? And
now you're just talking about aliens.
Pretty much.
They already did Alien Resurrection, which was Metroid Fusion, where they combined the heroine with the alien DNA, and then something new comes out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, Metroid is aliens. I get it.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated. But, you know, for me, all that stuff is gravy, but the big thing to me is, what are your new abilities? Because those are the main feature of Metroid, and the sequence that you go through to get new abilities and to gain access to new parts of the world to explore is basically 90% of what I love about Metroid, you know?
Yeah.
And it all comes down to, how well do they pull off that chain of events? You know, how interesting are these levels that chain abilities to each other? How well do those levels take advantage of the abilities that you have and make you challenge your ideas about the best way to use that stuff and how to incorporate it into your play style.
Yeah.
And a new Metroid game really needs to have new content in that regard, because if it doesn't have new upgrades, it's not really a new Metroid game to me. You know, it's just kind of a remix. It's like a level pack or something. But you've got to have new abilities. They've got to be able to surprise you with what you can do. That's the fun part, you know. It's like watching Spider-Man on the rooftop learn to use his powers. He knows he has all these new capabilities, but he's not really sure what he's capable of. And he just goes out there and he throws himself at a wall and tries to see what he can do. And that's fun in Metroid. It's never stopped being fun to me, but you have to keep mixing it up. So throw away the old powers. I mean, we can have a Metroid game without Screw Attack. It's not going to be the end of the world. You know, Screw Attack is in a way not that interesting of an item. It just makes you invincible. Mm-hmm. It's just like it's an invincibility star that turns on every time you jump. It makes the game really easy. That may not be the best way to end every Metroid game. So leave that old stuff behind. We've seen it before. We kind of know what you can do with it. And focus on new stuff and make us relearn how to play a Metroid game with all new powers.
That would be cool. Yeah, it would be cool if Samus was on a planet that had like an old civilization that was advanced as well, and she could incorporate new technologies into her suit. Maybe she's forced to because it's malfunctioned. Then you could get a bit crazy with it, because the technology wouldn't necessarily have to be based off the Chozo design. Then it could just sort of change the way her suit works in a really weird way. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but, you know, you could see them doing some odd power-ups that are out of character for Metroid.
Yeah, she could walk right into Aperture Labs and grab a portal gun and go to town.
There's
so many possibilities. And and I think there's, you know, that's really what I'm interested in. I don't really care about how you're going to introduce me to the super missile all over again.
You know? Yeah.
But we've done that a bunch. So let's do something new with Metroid. It's just too good to waste on just kind of redoing the same things over and over.
Yeah. That's how I feel about a lot of Nintendo franchises, actually. Especially in, like, recent years, Zelda. I would like to just see them, you know, don't be scared to throw things away. Or
absolutely.
Do things differently. That's what they used to do all the time. And they seem to have backed away from that a little bit.
Yeah, they seem to think, well, if we don't include the boomerang in Zelda, then people won't no, it's a Zelda game. I'm like, no, nah, we're fine. We get it. It's it says Zelda on the box. You can do whatever you want. Yep. Make it cool, man.
All right. That'll probably do us for this segment. Thanks for joining me, Johnny.
Thanks for putting up with my late night, exhausted, curmudgeonly ramblings about Metroid.
That's right. I'm sure someone's going to listen to it. All right.
And congrats, by the way, on relaunching, revamping connectivity.
Thanks for that. I'm not sure how successful it's going so far, but we'll keep trucking along, eh?
Yeah, keep at it. You know, that's how you kind of figure out what you really want to do is keep doing it.
All right. Thanks, Johnny. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
And that's it for Connectivity this week. If you have any feedback, please leave some comments in the talkback thread on the forums. We are also in need of more listener mail, so please consider sending in your questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you enjoy Connectivity, please rate and review us on iTunes. This week's song is an orchestrated Chrono Trigger medley from the bonus CD that was included with the Nintendo DS version of the game. Thanks for listening.